You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Something's coming.
Stand by. Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast episode 111. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Yeah. Woo!
BJ has to get up super early for her job, so she was not able to make it on tonight. But in her stead, we have Justin Beam.
Hey.
Third time on the podcast, right?
Yep. I think so. Menage a trois.
Mm-hmm. It's been far too long. We've you know, you're one of those guests that I wish we would just keep having on over and over again.
Oh, call anytime.
Nice to have you back. So you started up a podcast, man. The Justin Beam, is it Radio Hour?
Radio Hour, yeah.
Which is never an hour and is not on radio.
Right. That's man.
So fucking ironic. It's so ironic. Yeah, I have loved being on, like, your show, for example, over time. And I love the format. I love the freedom of it. And I think there's a great community out there of so many great shows. And I've always wanted to do something that branched out a little bit beyond the perimeters of horror, because that's predominantly what I've been involved with. Not that my show is not primarily focused on that, but I wanted to do something a little bigger, not bigger, wider, I guess you'd say, in scope. So, and I kicked around a name for the show forever. It was so stressful for me because I'm like, it felt so pretentious to name it after myself, but I'm like, what else do I have? And what else would encapsulate something that's not horror based? Like, Screamcast makes sense. Yeah. You guys talk about horror. And so I just couldn't think of anything else. And it just came down. I mean, anybody who's close to me will attest to these endless stupid conversations about, does that even make sense? It sounds so fucking stupid. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I decided to put it together and finally pulled the trigger on it one day, and I've been loving it. I'm recording episode 3 tomorrow, and I have, I think, maybe 15 already booked out right now with guests. Yeah.
Very nice.
And you had sounds like you're prepared, unlike us.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm too nervous to not be.
If you want a podcast that actually makes sense and is prepared, you know, and Just listen to the Justin Beam Radio Hour.
No, I think it really is just a matter of a lot of the people that I'm bringing on are just like me. I'm going to be free probably. But a lot of the folks that I'm bringing on are, you know, you schedule them out of ways, or they're shooting somewhere or whatever. So that's part of why it's so scheduled out, which at first was kind of annoying, but now it's like, oh, that's great, because I know in September I have bang, 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 bang. Right. I mean, so it feels nice to have that. It's comforting. And also, it helps me get in my groove, and which I'm still very much trying to find.
Yeah.
Cause that's tough. It's tough being by yourself.
Yeah. I tried that. I tried by myself, then with guests before I had 3 kids. I had just like you, scheduled out in it, like,
right,
6 months in advance. I had every week scheduled out with an interview.
Yeah.
Or, you know, potential interview, possibly, like, you know, tentatively scheduled. But yeah, right, once I had kid number 3, it was, all bets were off, man. It's been been crazy ever since. But
you got to live life first.
I think if they got Brad here. Brad handles all the scheduling, but he's a busy son of a bitch too.
Yeah, I like, it's a good idea to like schedule. I mean, because I've tried like scheduling out that far ahead at first, but then, like, you know, obviously, you know, people, if the job pops up or something like that, I mean, by all means, they can take that before they come on this fucking show.
Yeah.
Right.
But it just seemed like every time I would do that, we would have just so many fallouts and fall throughs, which is fine. I mean, there's no complaints. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, we'll just reschedule. And I mean, I would say 80% of the time we reschedule, but it was just really difficult planning that far ahead, especially if you're dealing with people are kind of still active, and then you have to deal with an agent, and then they start asking price. I've had that happen.
Oh, wow.
I'm like,
really?
I'm like, no, it's not like that. I was like, wait, do like, fucking magazines and websites pay for interviews? Like, I've never heard of such a thing. No. I was like, that's insane. They're asking for money. I remember that's Linnea Quigley's manager originally asked for money. And I said, no, I was like, we're not paying for anything. This is, I mean, this is something for fun. Number one. And number two, like, it's pretty much all about the guests. It's like almost in a way free publicity.
Right.
And, I eventually went around him and just got interact with her. And she was like, that's insane. She's like, there's no way. I was like, good Lord, man. I've actually had a couple things like that. And I was like, I was like, maybe I'm not aware of something, but I thought this is like kind of a cool thing to do. Just be like, yeah, that sounds fun. You know, I'll do it. It's free publicity. It sounds, you know, if you know who we are, which we are prominently known with a lot of people, you know, they words out and they're like, yeah, sure. That sounds fantastic. But, I wish I was able to schedule that far out and not have any issues. Cause when you do that, then you like, you know, sometimes you spread yourself too thin or then you have too much and then you feel like they're waiting. But honestly, it's probably more or less, they're just like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then you remind them the week of, and they're like, oh yeah, I did have that thing.
Right. Yep.
You know, so
that's not always was with me, but cool, man. I'm glad it's going well. Let's jump into what's on our doorstep, and then we're going to be talking some cool announcements this week. So pretty much this show, we'll be talking about the whole Vestron video thing and the Lionsgate thing. I think there's a lot to talk about there. So we'll jump into that, but first let's find out what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Right. I can go first. Is that all right, Brent?
Well, I would say so to give Justin some time and for me to gather myself since you sprung this on me, Sean.
We do this every week. It's really not that big of a surprise.
You know what, Sean? I wasn't expecting it tonight because you didn't mention it. Because you are always like, we're going to do this, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
And you didn't do that, Sean.
It's been a week, man. It's been ridiculous.
No, it's cool. This show's never planned anyway. So
Since I've been home with the three kids today, I've had a headache since 4 o'clock.
Ooh.
So, you know. And then there's this, the whole election season, I get crazy and I watch the news too goddamn much.
Oh, and it's so depressing this year.
Dear God almighty. So I need to stop with all that. So it's been a headache inducing week. But I did get a couple things in. The first thing that I watched was a kind of this action flick. It's called Redeemer, starring Marco Zaror.
Yeah.
And,
dude, talk about the fucking – go ahead. I'll say something.
Well, I feel like the director is like a huge Assassin's Creed fan. This guy always has his hoodie up.
No,
all the time.
I mean, all right. So before, these guys are good guys. Marco Zaror is like one of the nicest fucking dudes ever, and he's a great martial artist. And Redeemer is kind of a long time coming because it's a buddy team that got together, like stunt guys, action choreographers, to make, you know, this film. And dude, just go ahead and say whatever. That's like kind of the background of the movie.
Yeah,
so
it's
a lot of fanfare and a lot of, you know, just like buddies making a movie together.
Yeah, it got a lot of really good reviews. So it was like $8.99 or something. It was super cheap, so I grabbed it. And, you know, it's a fun little action flick. I don't know if I'll ever watch this again. I would recommend it be, you know, like a rental. But, I mean, there's some brutal action. I mean, they don't shy away from the violence, which is great. You know. It is all right. I don't know.
It's just a little, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to ever go there. And then, you know, you have Noah Segan, Kid Blue, playing the most ridiculous, like, you know, top dog, you know, hitman, mafia, you know, dude, whatever he is in that movie, just wearing that like white suit. It's almost to the part where it's funny, but what really, really bugged me about the movie, and Marco Zaror is a great martial artist. I will watch anything he's in. He's has some actually great films where he's, you know, just doing some kick ass shit. I mean, he was pretty much the only good part of about Machete Kills. I was not a fan of that one either, but, what really bugged me is that they would, instead of filming, like instead of was I think they instead of filming in slow motion, they were slowing the film down and then speeding it up.
Yeah.
And it kept doing that off and on. And it was like, I was like, wait, why didn't like film in slow motion? Like it would jiggle. Like it almost like the film was like jiggling and then it just looked really corny when they do the slow-mo and they would do it constantly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just a little bit jarring for me. Yeah.
He's like this trust fund kid who's running organized crime or something. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, no, that's what it feels really like. Odd. And it's, but anyways, I saw it, a work print. I think it was a work print at Fantastic Fest, like 2014 or something like that. And I like Marco. I think he's got, you know, some real talent. I do want to see him like, you know, a little bit bigger budget.
Yeah. What I did like,
maybe a little more of a role rather than just kind of the musclehead action dude.
Yeah. It was like the, you know, strong silent type. But the one thing I did like is, how he does the Russian roulette basically every morning when he wakes up. He has his routine and he does the Russian roulette every morning to himself. And I thought that was pretty badass. But, you know, good little action flick. I would say if you saw this on Netflix or whatever, you know, give it a watch. It's 90 minutes.
You know what's badass is I think in like a Takeshi Miike film, they do Russian roulette, but instead of putting five empty chambers, they only have one empty chamber with five bullets.
Oh, God.
Now, that scene was insane. I can't remember the name of the movie, though.
I feel like I've seen that.
I wish I could think about it. And it's like so funny because the guy spins it, holds it against his head, it clicks, and then the other guy grabs it and is all excited. Pulls the trigger and blows his head off.
What movie was
that? I can't remember.
My tongue. All right. Anyway, so we've been trying to get a interview, or you have, with John Cassier.
Yes.
The voice of the Crypt Keeper, and that kind of fell through this week, but we're rescheduling. So, but in the meantime, I decided that is like, what a good time for me to get into the Scream Factory Tales from the Crypt Blu-rays, Demon Knight and Bordello of Blood. So I watched those, and I you know, people always shit on Bordello of Blood. I think it's
fun.
It's fun. It is what it is.
I mean, it's no Demon Knight. I think that's what people were coming from is that
they're
gonna be like, I'm gonna watch this, and it's Tales from the Crypt. Like, I mean, first film they completely knock out of the park because I consider Demon Knight one of the best horror films of the 90s by
Same,
far.
I agree.
It's got a fantastic cast. I mean, it has, you know, Jada Pinkett as the lead, a black woman as the lead in a horror film, and kind of another strong female, CCH Pounder is in it, and she plays fucking badass. Thomas Hayden Church is absolutely hilarious in the fucking movie. William Sadler is a badass. Like, it's got a kick-ass cast, man.
It's just
so strong, and it's, you know, violent, it's gross, it's got some kick-ass action. I mean, that movie's fantastic, but I was always a fan of Bordello of Blood too. It was a different level of movie, but I mean, fucking Dennis Miller in a horror movie.
I think this is the first time I've rewatched this as an adult, and I saw this when it first came out. I think it was on VHS when it first came out.
You watched it for titties, didn't you?
Totally. You kidding me? I totally watched this for titties. And, you know, Dennis Miller, I thought was, at the time, I liked the Dennis Miller show and stuff like that. And I think he was on HBO a lot, doing a lot of stand up. So I kind of like knew who he was, you know, Corey Feldman and, you know, hot naked chicks.
Angie Everhart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Anyway, so watching it as an adult now, though, I mean, I could definitely see all the problems with it. Dennis Miller is pretty awful. He's pretty.
Well, I think it was on the special features. He fucking, like, did not want to do the movie.
No, and that's what's great.
Like, apparently, like, he had meltdowns, like, on the set and wouldn't speak to anybody.
Yeah, he would.
And was just a total dick. Like,
yeah, it's.
I could totally see Dennis Miller doing that, though, too, so.
Yeah, no, it's the reason, I mean, if you're on the fence with this, I mean, the making of documentary is great, because it's basically the let's shit on Dennis Miller, and it's almost like they've all been holding this in for years, and they finally have a chance to let all the shit out, because everyone's complaining about this. Angie Everhart, I don't really think she got too many roles after this, but she
didn't have roles to begin with. I mean, she was just, you know, she played in some, you know, kind of up all, like Rhonda Shear up all night movies.
Yeah,
it seemed like you could catch one of her movies on USA.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing with Anna Nicole Smith, when she had kind of had that run of, like, you know, action movies for a second.
Yeah.
And then, you know, did some like cameos and, you know, yeah, but, I don't know. She just got stuck in that
kind of
beauty queen role.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, she's complaining about everything, and she was like, I was trying to be a serious actress. And it's like, you're in a Tales from the Crypt movie. So I guess she was a bit stuck up.
Wrong with
her. I think she was a bit stuck up on set too, because Corey Feldman was just letting everyone have it. But most of the time they were complaining about Dennis Miller. Erica Eleniak.
Yeah,
She got her role because she was dating somebody who was involved with the production. But then later on, she talks about breaking up with Sylvester Stallone. So she got the role because she was sleeping with somebody involved with the production, but I think she was also dating Sylvester Stallone. I don't know. The making of is fantastic.
You're going to start rumors, Sean. You're going to start rumors, and Eric Eleniak fan club is going to come after you.
I guess. No, that's what it said in the thing. But and I think A.L. Katz, I think he probably had to go to therapy after this film, because he is on the verge. Like, it's like, dude, take a break and smoke a cigarette or something. Calm down, because he is just so agitated during the interview. That's the best thing about the Blu-ray, you know, about this Blu-ray. Pretty great. But it looks pretty good, but both these are pretty great. I mean, Demon Knight, watching, like, because Demon Knight came out before Bordello of Blood, but yeah, I watched it afterwards. And then, if you watch Bordello of Blood and then watch Demon Knight, it's night and day with the quality of, like, what kind of films they are. And Demon Knight's a blast. It's great. And the Blu-ray looks good. Like, it has some issues, like, and the first, like, through the credits, it looks really bad. And then all of a sudden it looks really good. So I don't know if they had some element problems with that.
Well, like the intro? Because they probably just used the film stock of the TV show.
No, that's, I think, what they did. And it looks pretty bad. And into the credits, it looks pretty bad. And then it kind of smooths out. So, but these are fun. I'm glad these are out on Blu-ray. Weren't you saying people were upset with the transfers of these at all? Or?
No, they were just normal. I mean, just little HD master, which I was kind of hoping more from this one, just because this is kind of a long awaited one.
Right.
Cause they were released overseas, you know, like Germany had Tales from the Crypt, you know, Demon Knight on Blu-ray and stuff like that. So I think they were hoping for a little bit more. It was just whatever. I was just happy that they kind of got, they resurfaced again, because originally when the clamshell DVD came out, it was kind of hard to find, and then it went out of print, and then eventually they re-released it. So I'm just happy that it's in everybody's home at this point.
Oh yeah.
Just because it was, you know, 90s always get shit on for the worst decade in horror. And while I tend to kind of agree with it's not the strongest, I also say that there's a shit ton of a lot of fun and, you know, kind of staples in 90s horror that kind of, you know, shaped horror to what it is today. It's just that I think it gets shit on a lot because of the special effects, because they were trying something new.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing with the late 80s with a lot of science fiction stuff, but sometimes science fiction's a little bit more forgivable than, you know, blood splatter and monster effects and stuff.
Yeah. Well, these, I think these are all practical effects.
Oh yeah. They're all practical. Well, the TV show was too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it looks good. I mean, I'm excited for the new TV show that's going to be coming out next year. So, Tales from the Crypt. So, I mean, I would love to see more Tales from the Crypt movies, you know. There's just something about them that's this unadulterated, just fun, goofy, gory fun. And that's why I like the intro, the opening of Bordello of Blood is fantastic. The whole Indiana Jones type ripoff thing.
Yeah.
Super fun. Super gory. The guy's eyeballs popping out. I mean, it's, you know, I feel like we don't get enough of these kind of campy, splattery, just fun horror films anymore. I think they try to be too gritty and grimy. You know, I just, you know, make them a little more fun. Have some splatter and, you know, don't know.
Anyway, in fact, there's a third Tales from the Crypt movie, if you didn't know that.
Death Becomes Her?
No. Death Becomes Her? What is wrong with you?
Well, people are saying that Death Becomes Her could have been a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Well, there was a Tales from the Crypt third movie called Ritual with Craig Schaefer, Jennifer Grey, and like Tim Curry's in it, I think.
Really?
Yeah, and it's Tales from the Crypt movie. It just was not like distributed well and kind of hidden. But yeah, it's the third Tales from the Crypt movie.
Wow.
It's I think it's on DVD. It's not the greatest, but Jennifer Grey's in it, and she's always been a favorite.
Nice. All right.
What else do you have, Sean?
That's it. That's all I got.
Ooh, I'm going to hand it over to Justin because he's being quiet. I don't want to hear his voice.
I got the new Criterion Blu-ray of Carnival of Souls. Yes. When Barnes & Noble had their 50% off thing, which I love. It's kind of an annual ritual for me. And I love it. I really, really love that movie. I love it when it looks shitty, and I love it when it looks amazing, and it's never looked better than this.
Right. And I was just about to say that, man.
Yeah. I think it's got such a unique aura about it. It's its own entity for sure. And I even have this uncut soundtrack that came out a number of years ago with dialogue cut into it. And it has an interview on the end of it and stuff. But I mean, it's great driving music. It's just all around great. Anyway, do either of you have the DVD that Criterion put out a while back?
No, this is on my,
no, I just have the Blu-ray that's recently released.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to be grabbing it at some point soon.
The only thing missing, it has a 4K transfer and a bunch of documentary stuff that ported over from Blu-ray edition or laser discs and all this stuff in the past. The only thing that's missing that is a good reason to get the DVD and keep it, and I think the DVD maybe came out 10 years ago or something, is that it has an extended cut of the film. Because in its true form, it runs about 80 minutes or so, I think. And the uncut version, I want to say, is like an extra like 30 minutes or more in it.
Wow, that's kind of crucial to leave out.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember the DVD. I've just had so many, I've owned so many shitty versions of that movie on DVD. You know, and I never picked up the DVD, Criterion, but that's interesting.
Yeah. I think this is one that is worth picking up. It really, the transfer, I think, is one of the top five I've ever seen for anything. I mean, alongside the Jaws disc from Universal from a couple years ago and a few other things. I'm just so blown away by it. I remember when they did Island of Lost Souls a few years ago, and I was very excited for that to come out. And the transfer is so goddamn bad that I sold it and I just watched the DVD. I mean, I prefer the quality of the DVD over the Blu-ray. It's really sad because it's so incredibly intensely grainy. How do you guys feel about noise reduction on Blu-ray when they're doing the high-res transfers?
If it's egregious, I'm not a fan. If they look waxy and plasticky, I'll take the grain. I mean, I sought out the non-DNR'd Blu-ray of Predator. So, like, the first one wasn't DNR'd. And then they re-released it and DNR'd.
Yeah.
But with special features. So I have both of them, but I sought out the first release.
Yeah, it just matters. It just matters on the film in general, just, you know, what it is and the kind of importance. When it becomes like stuff that's black and white, though, I think it's kind of crucial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with you. Islands of Lost Souls is like one of my favorites. Yep. So when that came out on Blu-ray, I was, you know, fairly excited, but I owned a DVD of it. Honestly, I don't even think, I think it was like one of those like offbeat, yeah, like,
I don't
like
think
DVDs
it ever
that
had
came
an official
out
release. Yeah.
You know, cause I remember, kind of the prime time of DVD, a lot of these companies were releasing DVDs. Like I remember Top 10 Media was one of them, and they got like down and dirty with some like crazy titles. And I think I want to say I have it like on that. And I actually prefer that because of just what it looks like. It looks, it just looks, I don't know. It just looks cleaner to me. Like it looks like how it's supposed to be with, with the Blu-ray just look too processed, like I guess you could say. I don't know. That's just me, though. But I did notice it.
It seemed like they poured more grain into that transfer. Like they're like going the opposite direction of everyone. It almost seemed rebellious how shitty that transfer is on that fucking Blu-ray. It was so miserable. But so anyway, the Carnival of Souls is so highly recommended, and it has more than you could ever dream of in terms of supplements, down to the score being isolated as well, which, again, so much love for that thing. And also, I did my first dip, made my first dip into Arrow. I got that American Horror Project, Volume 1.
Oh, my God.
It's beautiful.
And the reason I got that was I've long been a huge fan of Malatesta's Carnival of Blood. I did a piece in Fangoria, I don't know, like 5 years ago on that movie. And I never, ever dreamed that it would get any farther than the DVD that Chris Spieth, the director, had put out himself that was available through his jank little website. And I was so excited just to have that when it finally landed. And little did I dream. I mean, this is absolutely stunning, this package. I'm not a huge fan. I haven't spent a lot of time, I should say, with The Witch Came from the Sea and Premonition. I breezed through both of them. I had them in the background over the course of a couple of days as I was doing stuff. So I wasn't real focused on them. I did hit the audio on one of the, I remember, I think it was The Witch Who Came from the Sea. And I accidentally hit the audio button, the remote, and it switched to a commentary track that was revolting. It was so poorly recorded. I couldn't believe it. I was like, is this Arrow? Like, is this the quality stuff for you? It's really just people in a room. And it sounds like none of them are near the one mic that's like 8 feet in front of them. And, oh, it's just so bad. It's so terrible. But anyway, Malatesta's looks incredible. And the bonus features on it. It's another one where the transfer is worlds beyond anything I'd ever see from this movie. Same thing with Carnival of Souls. With these films that have been swimming in public domain for so long, I think a lot of these distribution companies don't see dollar signs with them. I think they don't see the worth. But I think someone like Criterion, that's part of what makes them special, is that 90% of their catalog is stuff that the majority of the world has never heard of. And I think that's beautiful. So kudos to Stero for putting this Malatesta's out finally and giving it so much love. I recommend that highly. It's got a great book with it. The package is fantastic. It's super sexy on the shelf. Reversible. I mean, it's just all great. It's all good.
The audio commentary for Witch Came to See, Dean Cundey is involved with that.
Maybe it was Premonition. One of them. Yeah, I don't remember which one. I should qualify that by saying I'm not sure, but it's one of those two for sure.
Well, I know that there's a few people in The Witch Who Came from the Sea: Matt Clymer, Millie Perkins, and Dean Cundey. But I mean, sometimes who knows? Like, I've heard some that are just awful. It sounds like they just put an iPhone in the center of a room as they're watching. And those, you know, I don't know.
It's good that it's there.
Yeah.
It's good that it's there. But it was like the first bonus feature that I've ever touched on from an Arrow release. And it was that. And I'm Jesus Christ, what am I in for?
They're usually not like that. You know, because I actually had picked up Satan's Blade recently. And the interviews on that thing are horrendous. Like they have the camera set up and the director like gets up and stands for like 30 minutes of the interview. And it's just pointing directly at his dick while he's like talking and like lifting up stuff. And the camera focuses on like what he picks up. But then the camera just stays there and he's like standing the entire time.
I have a feeling that was on the Slasher video one too.
Yeah, no, I think it was. But it's just like, you know, it's just – I don't know. I think with companies like Red Shirt, they do a lot of work and a lot of, you know – Just a lot of work in general with editing and setting things up and capturing so many cool moments that these people that, you know, not saying Arrow, but this is everybody that just kind of do the, you know, iPhone. Because I think Sean and I've complained that a bit a few times about commentaries and everything like that. And, you know, some of the interviews and that are basically almost filmed maybe by a family member and then sent to these companies. That's kind of what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I always praise Scream Factory for, because they go above and beyond of those special features. Because even stuff that was ported over from old DVDs were, you know, usually conducted by the companies themselves, you know, in preparation for the DVD or even the Laserdisc. You know, so it was usually quality stuff. But now it seems like, hey, we wanted to release, you know, something like Satan's Blade on Blu-ray. Hey, can you throw together? Because they're not going to fly them out for something as such as Satan's Blade, not, you know, diminishing the movie at all. It's just that, you know, maybe it's not worth, you know, $2,000 to fly somebody out, put them up, and then conduct an interview. They just do it in the comfort of their own home. But then we're also getting stuff like that where it's almost to the point where it's hilarious. It's not even – I can't even consider it bad because it was almost enjoyably bad. But anyways, yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, especially coming from Arrow with kind of the subpar interviews or anything like that. Because they really do go above and beyond in everything else. Their special features are always kind of like hit or miss on those types of things.
Yeah. I'm glad it's there. I'm glad all of it's there. Any of it's there for any of these movies. But it's just, I think, honestly, at this point, to an extent, I even feel spoiled saying that. Like, damn it, the audio quality is not great in that commentary. Like, holy shit, there's a commentary on this movie that no one has ever given a shit about for distribution in the past, and no one's ever given love to. So I feel rather spoiled by complaining about that. But anyway, saw the release. I'm really happy with what I've seen from them, and I'm definitely going to be picking up more. I need to get a region-free Blue player. I have a DVD player, but I hardly ever use it. Do you remember when DVDs, like you were talking about the first mega waves of DVD releasing, there was so much stuff import-wise, and I got a region-free player pretty early on. The quality of the releases that I was picking up from wherever, Amazon.jp or eBay or wherever,
yeah,
so many of them were so damn bad that
there's so many bootlegs. That was the thing.
So many bootlegs.
These were companies, but there were companies that were promoting bootlegs.
Right.
So, you know, it was a lot of misses. So it's a lot, you know, it's great that some of these companies are going through and releasing, you know, re-releasing, because all we've ever had was, you know, some shitty DVD for years, and then, you know, even if it's public domain, it's worse because it's on every fucking horror pack that comes out.
Yeah.
You know, 50 horror movies, you know, and then you have like these Hammer titles on there. You have, you know, Carnival of Souls on
Dementia
every
13.
Single one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice that, you know, companies are going around and giving them at least a, you know, some of them a somewhat proper release, and other ones like Carnival of Souls, finally, after, you know, all these years and years, you know, the treatment it kind of deserves. But and it's kind of remarkable, not remarkable, but it's in more or less, you know, I give props to Criterion because they're releasing a movie that's been released probably literally 100 times on DVD from various companies, just kind of the licensing issue and, you know, kind of public domain that it was. Still is, I guess, you know, that taking a chance that people will eventually, you know, pick it up, even though they probably own it 100 times already. So, that, you know, that's refreshing to see companies do that.
I'm not buying Wes Anderson movies from Criterion anymore.
Okay, Sean.
They release all of them. It's like, dude, I just picked this up for like $5.99 at Best Buy. I'm happy with the movie. And then all of a sudden, like, Criterion comes out, and that was back when I was trying to make everything match. Now I don't give a shit.
No.
Is that how you organize? You like organized by distributor or something?
Well, I had all my Criterions together, and I was like, well, I need to get all the Wes Anderson movies all right by each other. Now I'm just like, you know what? Budapest Hotel or whatever the hell, staying with the $5.99 Blu-ray that I bought. That one and the one about the Boy Scouts. I'm not upgrading those.
I've left a lot of that behind. I'm not a completist on anything really anymore, or very, very, very few things, and I most certainly don't care how anything looks on my shelves. I mean, half it's not even alphabetized or anything.
Part of it's because I'm just running out of room, and my wife is just thinks it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm in my office right now, and I got just stacks of movies because I have no room in my case anymore. So I need to overhaul this room here and add shelves, and you know. So, but it's just one of those projects. I'm like, I need to. Before I do that, I need to downgrade quite a bit. And I got a bunch of fat, you know, just a bunch of crap that I need to get rid of. But yeah, no, I'm no longer a completist, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Brad.
Oh, is that it for Justin?
I was guessing yes, no.
Yeah, that's all I got. I mean, I guess outside of theatrically, I will say I went and saw Shallows a second time. Oh, okay. The Shallows.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to see that yet.
I need to see that too. My wife actually wants to see it.
Yeah, it's very good. Very, very good. The shark stuff at the end is out of control, intense, and nice. Awesome. So very, very, I'm not going to say too much about it because it's so new, but highly recommended. And also, I was one of the fortunate few. We went and got to see Neon Demon the week that it came out, and we were in a theater of four people, and of course we were two of them, and it was incredible. It was so great, and wanted to go back a week later, and it was gone already. So I love that movie so much, and it got shit on so hard, and I don't understand why. I think it's misunderstood, but when it comes out, I recommend everyone checks that one out too.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I was a big fan of Only God Forgives, and people shit all over that too.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of venom for that film. Yeah,
so they were expecting us Drive 2, so.
Yeah, I think this surpasses everything he's done so far. I really think it's going to be hard for him to top this, but I look forward to seeing what he does because he's on an upward trajectory for sure.
He's a great director. I mean, he's doing his own thing. You know what I mean? He's not getting wrapped up in franchise films and stuff. He's doing his own movies and making movies that he wants to make. And, you know, I mean, I love directors that will just put out their vision and not give a shit and just keep on churning stuff out. I mean, that's why I have still have a huge respect for Kevin Smith, because he doesn't give a fuck like what anyone thinks about his movies. There was a clip of him where somebody told him they didn't like Yoga Hosers, and he just was like, I don't care. So you didn't like the movie. You know what I mean? He just went on this big long thing, and he's like, I'm not making it. He's making them for him, and he hopes people like him, but he thinks they're funny, and that's it. He's at a position where he's making all the investors' money back. Everyone got their money back. And, you know, he's happy with it. So really, who cares? Like, as long as that's art, you know what I mean? And we don't have a lot of directors doing that. You know, we have a handful, and they're not churning out these, you know, mainstream blockbuster things. So people complain about original movies, then they get original movies, and then they complain about those original movies.
Oh yeah, that's an epidemic. And so, I think that to your point on don't get a lot of directors like that. I think in the theaters we don't get a lot of directors because the distribution companies, the chains, don't want to pick this stuff up. That's why I was shocked to see Neon Demon anywhere. And I think if it wasn't for Drive, I don't think it would have even gotten theatrical, but because it's so out there.
Right.
But independent film has always been the breeding ground for the most incredible art, and it always will be. Those are movies made by people who are passionate about what they're making. Not that everyone who makes a movie isn't, but these are movies that don't have any kind of commercial consideration in mind. And when you're in that playground, it's literally limitless. And so if you're ever bored with Hollywood, stop going to the theater. Start searching online. Start following links and listen to podcasts and check out some of the backwater stuff that you might not have ever heard of before. Absolutely worth looking into. And go get an Amazon Prime membership, because there's so much insane stuff on Amazon Prime that will never be on Netflix.
Yeah.
Netflix is like multiplex light for the most part. They don't get really into a lot of retro, although I see a little bit more of that creeping in now. But I've been so thrilled with Amazon Prime.
Oh, they have all those like Redemption, you know what I mean?
Rollins films and everything.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, it's incredible.
Netflix was like that for a while, and I would stay up and just drink beers and watch the craziest shit.
Right.
There's some movies I need to remember. I need to like write them down. There's one that I saw on Netflix that was amazing. I can't remember. Mutant was in the title. Of course.
Mutant with Wings Hauser.
No. It was
Mutants, the French zombie flick.
No, it was something. I need to find it because that's one of those movies that needs to come out on Blu-ray.
Mutant Hunt.
I think it's Mutant Hunt, I think.
Yeah, Charles Band movie or whatever. He produced it, one of the things.
I think so. But, stuff like that. Yeah, Mutant Hunt. But Netflix, they're not that much on Netflix anymore, but you'll find a ton of the stuff on Amazon Prime for sure.
And also just go to film festivals, because they're everywhere. They're all over. Your state has one. Wherever you are, your state has one somewhere. drive a few hours, spend a weekend watching independent film. It is the greatest gateway into this stuff. And honestly, as horror fans, how the hell can we complain about the lack of ideas in movies these days? Because the Cineplex has never meant a damn thing to us.
Yeah.
The things that we treasure are things that have historically been trashed at the box office. John Carpenter's never made a technically successful film, short of maybe a couple. But he's an icon. Romero. I had this discussion last night on Attack of the Killer podcast. We went on and on about Romero and Carpenter and resurrection of career versus truth to art, all of this stuff. And you realize that the world doesn't know about most of the people that are household names to us. And I think it's because we live in this sort of sphere where we have three magazines we read instead of going to the newsstand and having 50 about the entertainment that we love. And so it's very insulated in that way. And there, and it is a small community of the, that's producing this stuff too. So you come out of that educated, very well educated, passionate, dedicated to the artists and actors and whoever. You show up to a movie in horror for a lot of different reasons and a lot of different people, not just because it stars Matthew McConaughey. And that's why someone shows up to a romantic comedy. It's not about the story, because it's going to be the same thing. You're showing for like a star. There's star power. So anyway, I don't understand the negativity in the horror circles, period, let alone this constant dirge of people pissing and moaning about the lack of quality and like lack of inventiveness and what's going on. Like, you are blind. You are not paying attention to what's out there if you think that's the case, because there's more than ever and it's more accessible than ever. And a lot of it's, in fact, most of it's probably free to find. If you go to a filmmaker's website and they might have a streaming, or if they can put their stuff on YouTube, or go to a film festival, a mod, you know, spend 10 bucks for a weekend pass and you're going to see 50 movies or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So it's out there is the bottom line. So there's no reason to complain. There's no excuse for that. And it has never meant anything to us anyway as horror films. We don't care about the box office.
Nice. Agreed.
Agreed.
All right. All right, Brad, what you got?
Well, speaking of film festivals, I had to jot down everything since Sean is making me do this. I watched a few films for Fantasia. I got around to seeing. First, we will start off with Ben Wheatley produced Tank 432, I think it's called. Originally called like Belly of the Bulldog or something like that. Interesting flick. Rupert Evans is in it, of course, who I've always been a huge fan of. You know, I'm a big fan of I pretty much say on every other podcast, Silent Blackout. It was one of my favorite films pretty much ever. And he's in that. He was recently kind of in The Boy. He's the, you know, the male hero in that film. And, this is kind of a military flick where these, you know, this kind of battalion is on a, kind of dropped right in the middle of their, mission, and, some shit goes sour. And they end up running, and they run to basically this, you know, like World War II old tank that's out in the middle of a field. Once they get in the tank for protection, they get stuck in the tank, and it won't open so they can go outside. And the tank's not functioning. So you have about six people in this tank, you know, and dealing, and, you know, with they're in there for a little while. Dealing with, you know, issues, of course. You know, there's a sense of, you know, claustrophobia. Trust is a big issue. And kind of just keeping your sanity. While on the outside, they're being stalked by something. And that's kind of where the story unfolds, going towards there. Ben Wheatley, you know, that's the reason why I wanted to watch it, just because he produced it. The films that he's directed, Sightseers, High Rise, you know, Kill List was one of my favorite films of that year. Ben Wheatley is a phenomenal filmmaker. He is fantastic. He has some of the greatest, just he has this great eye. He has this cool, you know, just outlook on just film in general. And so when he is going to produce something, I would imagine that this is kind of the same route. That he, you know, just obviously it caught his eye. So what's so special about this that Ben Wheatley is, you know, doing as well. And it's really cool. It's a cool story. It definitely feels, you know, like you can totally tell that Ben Wheatley was involved just because how it's set up. You know, and come to find out the director has worked with Ben Wheatley on films, like the cinematographer and, you know, everything like that. So it's definitely kind of a family oriented in that sense. Definitely a fun film. You know, it's one of definitely, it's very, very slow burn, which I'm always a big fan of because I don't like movies that are always in your face. I like movies that make you think, make you ponder what's going on, keeps you guessing. And then after about an hour and 20 minutes, they're like, boom, here you go. And it's like, yes, that's refreshing to me. Jump scares and stuff are fun, but every once in a while, it's cool to have, you know, something that is a treat that's new to you. And then I got around to watching a movie called White Coffin. This was actually Bogliano produced this. I don't know if he co-wrote it, but it was another kind of family-oriented deal. Spanish flick, super fucking, like, just... It's about a woman that's on a road trip with her kid, and when she stops at a gas station, the child is kidnapped. She finds the truck that the child's being, you know, kidnapped in and follows it. During the high-speed chase, she gets a phone call saying, leave it alone or you'll die. And then an ambulance pops up, with lights on, runs her off the road. She crashes. Soon to find out when she comes to, she's in kind of a game with three other females, all women, or not all women, duh. All moms, and they are playing a game. Only one kid can survive. And if you know anything about women and kids, they will do anything for their baby. And this shit gets insane. It's really fucking cool. Definitely feels like a Bogliano flick. If you're not familiar, he's did films like Cold Sweat, Penumbra, Late Phases was more popular one that came out recently. Bogliano, or Here Comes the Devil, was another one of my favorites that he did a couple years ago. He's just, you know, this is a guy that feels like all his movies that he's attached to and makes with people, like, there's this 90s feel to them. Like, it feels like this guy would have been so successful in the 90s, because he has this, like, kind of cheese factor that the 90s had. And from this other, I can't remember the director's name. I wish I could, because I keep on mentioning people that are producing and not actually directing, and that makes me feel bad. De La Vega is this, Daniel De La Vega is this guy's name. And this is a screenplay by, I guess, Bogliano and his brother. It is kind of one of those white knuckle, like, adrenaline fueled movies. And it's Spanish, so therefore you know it doesn't give a fuck. Because Spanish films, they no holds barred on those films. They will go above and beyond to shock you, and goddamn, that movie gets brutal. Next up from Fantasia was this was actually one of my favorites. It's called The Unseen. It is about a man that's kind of down on his luck, works a dead-end job, not a very good father. Comes to find out he's slowly disappearing, parts of his body, and he's in immense pain because his ribs are kind of like cracking and disappearing. And he finds out that his daughter is in trouble, and so his last attempt to be a good father, he goes after her to basically save her. And it's kind of like this Invisible Man type kind of like spinoff too, because he's completely disappearing, like arms and like part of his head's disappearing so you can like see into his brain and shit. Great special effects for kind of a, you know, kind of an indie. Mm-hmm. Really heartfelt, got me a little teary eyed. It gets super emotional. It's not like overly violent or anything like that. It's just basically, you know, there's a lot to be said visually and just story-wise. You know, someone being invisible to their family, that type of thing. He feels invisible. Now he is invisible. Just a lot of subtext to the film. Really, really great. Definitely one of the better films that I've seen come out of Fantasia. And not like being brutal or horror or anything like that. Just kind of a unique story. Next up from Fantasia. See, you got me all screwed up, Sean. I didn't have my notes.
Who cares about Fantasia? Just talk about Suicide Squad.
Before I get into that, I watched another flick. I guess this is coming out on Blu-ray fairly soon. It's one of those like limited editions from the filmmakers. I usually don't watch movies that are sent to me like that, just because we get an abundance of them. I do, at least. I just don't have the time. But I gave this one a shot because, you know, it was one of those, hey, you like VHS era stuff, you know, watch this. It's called Lake Nowhere. And technically it's a short film surrounded by, you know, commercials made by the filmmakers. Because it feels like you put a tape in, one of those tapes that's been taped over and taped over and taped over. Okay. So you get glimpses of, like, commercials, like this beer commercial they have, fake trailers. And finally gets into this kind of, slasher-esque backwoods thriller. That kind of turns out to be a little bit more than that, which is pretty cool. Just didn't grab me 100% just because if you're going to make something nostalgia or want to make a film in vain of those types of things, don't wink at the camera so much. It doesn't do it anymore. Like, we get it. We're horror fans. We know what you're trying to do. You don't have to keep shoving it in our face. Like, we get it. It's fun. But it's not fun when you make us realize that what we're watching. Like, let us watch the movie what it is, and whatever you're inspired by, we'll emulate on the screen and pour through the screen, and we'll see it. Filmmakers do it all the time. In-your-face stuff, it's not appeasing to our eyes anymore. It's just more or less you get an eye roll. But a decent fun short film turned into, like, I guess it's like 50 minutes total. The film itself is probably like maybe 30, which I said it's like a short, but surrounded by kind of a VHS era type thing. And that was kind of fun. Next up was I got around to watching the Scream Factory's Return of the Living Dead. Scream Factory's doing some killer work with these scans. When they actually go ahead and they put forth the effort and do these 2K scans, basically of these, like, I mean, whether it's interpositive negative or just, you know, the negative of the film, they're doing a great job, especially with Return of the Living Dead, because that film's been released not very much. It had, you know, of course, it's VHS, and then it went out of print. It was extremely hard to find when I was little. And then eventually came out on DVD. I remember the day going to Best Buy. And for some reason, Best Buy had like 100 copies just sticking right there in the, you know, front rack. I guess they anticipated it or something. I have no idea. Picked that up, and then eventually came out on Blu-ray. And the Blu-ray was very underwhelming. And then officially it, gets the best release it's ever had. It is crisp and clear and it sounds great. The soundtrack's great. I know it is missing that damn song. As far as, a whole, it's definitely worth every penny, that they put in, that you'll put into this release and all the work that they put in. People that are a fan of special features, it's packed. I didn't watch any of them because I've watched so much shit of Return of the Living Dead. I kind of know everything, you know, the full story behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff. I just want to see a great transfer of the movie, and that's what you get. But you get jam-packed with special features, great transfer, sounds fantastic. Everybody knows what the movie is, so I'm obviously not going to talk about it. Definitely one of the best I've seen in quite some time. Next up, dude, you talk about transfers, Justin. Fucking Blood, or, I just lost my train of thought. Blood and Black Lace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have never seen something look so beautiful and so crisp and clear that they even put basically in the front. The arrow's kind of almost like winking, like, hey, we did this and we're super proud of it and we put a fuck ton of work into it.
That's awesome.
Mario Bava is just, he's great with just cinematography, great with colors, great with lighting. He can tell a story just through colors. And I've mentioned that many a times on the show with Pedro Almodovar. He's just really great at foreshadowing his characters, you know, have them dressed in red or something. You know, there'll be something like I mentioned it before is like Broken Embraces when Penelope Cruz walks in and there's like posters of like guns on the wall and they're pointed directly at her. Like, it's just like wonderfully set up and everything like that. And just Mario Bava does that. And he's Blood and Black Lace is just beautiful. It's stylish. It's ultra violent. It's, you know, it's a great thriller. It's a great mystery. Mm-hmm. Kind of has this like neo-noir aspect to it. You know, he's just like with this film, I've seen it before, but it honestly with transfers like this and, you know, kind of the soundtrack and the score that's added back in with, just the crisp and clearness to these audio tracks and music tracks. It just feels like we're watching the movie for the first time again, in which what we'll get into when we start actually officially talking about these Vestron titles, it's these movies when they're re-released like this, it makes us feel like we're watching the film again, you know, for the first time because we're seeing it in an aspect that we've never seen it before. And it feels new to us. And I've seen Blood and Black Lace a couple times in the past, but seeing it in this light and just kind of, the transfer and the work that has went into this, it is an absolutely gorgeous film. Definitely one of the best, you know, it has giallo kind of feel to it. It is giallo, but it's almost like kind of like how Psycho is looked at as a giallo. It's something a lot more than that. Where it's not even the fact we look at it kind of like a giallo. It's something on, you know, it's its own entity. It's definitely one of Mario Bava's, other than maybe Black Sunday, one of his best films and best looking films. I mean, I could watch that shit on mute.
Oh yeah,
and just gorgeous. Like every frame, you know that. I really don't like the Twitter account just because everything's just symmetrical, but that one perfect shot thing, you know, I don't get that thing because everything's just symmetrical. Everything's like, okay, that's not really a perfect shot. It's just, you know, everything's in place. But every shot, it feels like in Blood and Black Lace is just perfect. And the intro to that movie is just, it's like so off the wall and new. Even to this day, people wouldn't do that. But, you know, how they have the females like around the mannequins and then, you know, cause it's not like, you know, they're in character, but we're seeing, you know, basically visuals of these actors that are going to be portraying these roles beforehand and kind of like just the way they look in the lighting, you kind of, it's foreshadowing of these people's like motives, their kind of their attitudes, the presence that they give in the film, is the way they're lit, you know, what they're wearing. It's just like I love like even the people that you kind of, you know, watching the film over again, you kind of really notice it at first. And maybe I've never noticed this before, but even kind of your suspicious characters when they're introduced in the credit sequence, like they're standing back in the shadows. Like, I love how the detective's, like, out in bright light, but everybody that he's kind of investigating that you think that is behind the scenes of this murder mystery, they're kind of in the shadows. And I don't know. I think it's one of those almost near-perfect films and definitely one of Bava's best films by far. Best-looking.
Whenever people are asking, like, what movie, you know, if Arrow is having a sale or they want to finally buy an Arrow film, like, whenever they ask me, like, what do you recommend from Arrow? I'm always like, That's my first go-to. You know, have you seen Blood and Black Lace? Get that Blu-ray. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's outstanding, and it's just, I don't know. There's not too many films like that. I mean, we have a lot of giallo and great films, but as something as superb as Mario Bava's Blood and Black Lace, I don't think anything comes close. And especially like how stylized and pretty it is. Shit, man, that movie gets ultra violent at times.
Mm-hmm.
Like that killer is really thrashing around those women, and it's like, oh my god, like this might be a little too much, you know? Because giallos are always violent, and you know, but it doesn't. But what I was gonna say, the reason I was getting that, it doesn't come across as like kind of misogynistic, like a lot of the giallo films do.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultra violent, but it does it in such a way where it's not exploitive, you know. It doesn't get to that exploitation route, or even sexploitation, where it's not they're walking around naked and they get attacked each time. It's very stylized, which I I love those giallos too, but it's just refreshing to see something kind of new in that genre, especially kind of the peak of that genre around that time, and also being one of the films that influenced a lot more of those giallos that came later that are hyper-violent, you know, something that's kind of tame in a way, but also is violent, but also very stylized.
Yeah.
And there was that, and you really need me to talk about Suicide Squad. It was fun. You know? A completely different caliber of film that we're talking about here.
I know.
But, I saw Suicide Squad. I was not a Batman versus Superman fan. I'm kind of burnt out on superhero flicks. Just because it's not my thing. But I was always a big Batman fan, a big Suicide Squad fan since I was younger. So I was kind of excited to see a Suicide Squad movie, and I don't care what critics think. I want to go see the movie for myself. I enjoyed it. It does have its problems. It feels like it's definitely kind of studio-oriented, mainly because the film, like, it was dumbed down a lot in order to make you feel, mainly because not all these characters don't have, solo movies. So we're kind of thrown into a group of characters that, you know, the general audience doesn't know about, which is fine. You know, introducing characters is one thing, but it just depends on how you do it. And it felt like a big chunk of the movie was missing so they could do introductions and montages with these characters for mainly about 20 minutes. And it's like, okay, we got it. We know who they are now. And then immediately we jump into them saving the world. And it's like, something's missing here. It's like our first act was way too long, and we just kind of miss parts of the second act. And we get to the third act that's kind of cluttered and chaotic, and then it ends. But it has some great actions, got a wonderful soundtrack. It has all the characters are portrayed just like how they're supposed to be portrayed. And it's a fun movie. That's all I can say. I mean, it is a mess, I will agree. But I think there's enough cool, and you know, it's a basically way to put it. You can't say it's fantastic, you can't go on that. It's just a cool, fun flick. And if you're a fan of Suicide Squad, there's something in there that you'll like.
Nice.
So don't listen to everybody. I know the Batman versus Superman, the whole hatred of DC is silly. You know, it's not a great movie. That's the reason why people are not liking it. I think they were expecting more because obviously I think they were kind of misled by how amazing these trailers were for it. And then it's, you know, it's not, I mean, trailers just give you specs of the film, certain scenes to get you motivated. But now these companies are just dishing out, you know, fucking there's like 5 trailers for Suicide Squad. And then there's that Comic-Con footage. Like, give me a break, man. Give me one trailer. That's it. You don't have to show me 20 minutes of the movie in trailers.
Yeah. Well, then the problem too is when they do these trailers, the film's not done. So they'll put in moments that aren't in the final film. And then you've already seen that, and then you're just watching the movie waiting for certain scenes, and then they're not there, and then, you know.
Oh, dude, there's a few. It's weird because I could at least name 4 sequences that are in the trailer that's not in the movie.
Yeah.
So my guess is that what it feels like. You know, I obviously don't know this by fact by any means, but I know David Ayer. David Ayer makes some fabulous films, some great action films, maybe other than Sabotage, but he's made some great films, and this does not feel solely like his film. A lot of it does, but honestly, it feels like they made a solid movie, and then Hollywood execs were like, wait a second, no one knows who these characters are. There's nothing leading up to Justice League. So we need to drop 20 minutes of this movie and we need to literally introduce these characters with Batman and set it up for Justice League in these little montages, introducing these characters in some stylized Guy Ritchie snatch world. It feels like, you know, quick cuts, and it completely takes you out of them. Like if you look at the movie as a whole, but you just look at that montage, introduction sequences, that's not David Ayer's style.
Yeah. And well, he got kind of screwed over with the movie Sabotage too. Like that happened. Like that movie, there's another cut somewhere out there that nobody's seen. That's a better film. And
yeah.
It feels the same way. Like just choppy. But he's a good director. End of Watch is legit. Like Fury is an amazing film. Training Day. He wrote Training Day, right?
Yeah,
and he directed Harsh Times. I mean, he has a good voice as far as putting himself, you know, the films that he's done.
He's a good director. This one just feels like it's toyed with, mainly because DC is in a rush to catch up with Marvel with this Justice League, and they're too worried about setting up the future movies rather than focusing on the movie that's out and they're trying to promote at that time.
Well, I'm still waiting on my Sabotage director's cut. That's got to come out someday. Hopefully there's a director's cut like they did with Batman vs. Superman for Suicide Squad. That kind of saved that film a little bit with all the pieces that were missing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, it's a shame how DC and Warner Brothers are kind of handling these. They need to, who knows really the backstory. But I feel like they need to trust the directors a little bit more. Even Zack Snyder. Maybe, I don't know. But, you know, just let the directors turn in their movie and put them out there. But this is studio filmmaking, so
yeah,
what are you gonna do?
But I think that's pretty much it. There might be something else in there, but honestly, I don't remember.
We'll pick it up next week.
Yep.
All right, we got some Vestron video titles to talk about here in a bit. But first, let's get to news with Josh Obershaw. All right, Josh Obershaw joins us for the news. Welcome, Josh.
Hello, Sean. Hey, listeners out there. Kind of an exciting week, don't you think?
Heck yeah.
Cool. Why don't we just get started right away? I can't believe this is actually happening. Like, well, first of all, we knew for a while that Shopping Mall and Blood Diner were going to be released on Blu-ray via Lionsgate. But it looks like those two films are going to be the first two in a series that Lionsgate are dubbing the Vestron Video Collector Series. So not only are we getting those two films on Blu-ray, but we're also getting a series of Blu-rays dedicated to the 80s VHS label, which is really, really rad.
Heck yeah.
And I can't wait for these two to come out. These two are going to be issued out on the same day, and that's going to be September 27th. Now, there's going to be several audio commentaries on Shopping Mall. We got one with director and co-writer Jim Warnowski and actress Kelly Maroney and co-writer and second unit director Steve Mitchell. But we're also getting another commentary with historians and authors Nathaniel Thompson and Ryan Turek. Awesome. And there's actually one more audio commentary. Jesus. Wynorski's on this one, and plus co-writer and director Mitchell. And there's going to be a bunch of like little featurettes on the making of Shopping Mall, and there's also going to be an isolated score and the trailer as well. And for Blood Diner, this is interesting. Jackie Kong, the director of Blood Diner, she's notoriously press shy and elusive, but she took this one and she just grabbed it. And according to her, she supervised the mastering of the Blu-ray with the director of photography. And the extras for this one, she gets to do an audio commentary. And also there's going to be several featurettes on the making of it. And there's an archival interview with project consultant Eric Hayden. Now, this is going to be both of these and future installments of the Vestron Video Collector series, which we'll get into in a minute. They're going to be limited. How limited? They don't say. So if you want more of these movies to come out, more of these classic 80s titles that we've been waiting forever for Lionsgate to put out on Blu-ray, got to come out and buy these. Because the next few films that are confirmed to be following these two are going to be a double feature of Waxwork 1 and 2, Return of the Living Dead 3, and Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
Nice.
I can't wait for these two to come out. Because Chopping Mall is actually a really good movie, and Barbara Crampton's in it too, so how could you go wrong there? But I've been really, really curious about Blood Diner. That is one of those little cult films that I'm sort of late to the party on. So being able to see that film this way is going to be really, really exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm late to the party with Blood Diner too. So I actually have the German Blu-ray, but I haven't got around to watching it yet. So now I'll be buying this Vestron 1 as well. So to support it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's good. I'm really looking forward to see what they do. We'll be dissecting it here a little bit later with Justin Beam and Brad about all this, but yeah, it seems like, a very, very good idea on their part to finally dig into all these titles that they just have sitting around.
They're also putting out in this way too. I mean, this whole little prestige kind of format that guys like Arrow and Screen Factory are doing. I think I didn't expect them to go all out the way that they are. So kudos to Lionsgate. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I was expecting $14.99 HD master kind of thing. It's how Universal's been doing that. Like they did that with Carrie. They did that with The Burbs. So I was kind of expecting Lionsgate to just kind of do that, like shove them out quick and easy, just HD masters. But no, they're remastering. They're getting Red Shirt Pictures involved to do all the special features. So they're doing it right.
Very cool. But that wasn't all the good news that we had last week. Oh, no. Entertainment Weekly reported that Wilgo USA Entertainment has acquired the rights to the entire Phantasm franchise.
Wow.
Which means finally, Phantasm Ravager, the fifth and final installment, is coming out to theaters on October 7th. And that Phantasm Remaster, that HD restoration that J.J. Abrams worked on, that is going to be premiering in theaters on September 24th. And for Entertainment Weekly, Phantasm Remastered and the HD restorations of both Phantasm 3 and Phantasm 4 Oblivion will also be released on cable and digital platforms that day. And although plans aren't finalized, EW has been told Phantasm 2 will be available to view as well. Later in the year, the films will be released individually on Blu-ray and DVD, as well as in a collector's edition set. So, about time.
I didn't realize they were going to do an actual collector's edition set. That's sexy.
Very much so.
And it's Wilgo USA, which is like, they're the last company that I was thinking would do this, because I don't think they've really dove into horror. They've stuck with kind of more of like Korean films. And we talked about this last week, I believe, if I remember right. Last week was such a long show. I feel like I spaced out half the time, but yeah, Wilgo USA, that's really exciting for them, because they have an opportunity to really hit this out of the park and really please everyone who's been kind of clamoring for this set. So no pressure, guys. No pressure at all.
I know, seriously.
Don't fuck up.
This is like one of the most beloved franchises in horror history. So, yeah, I wonder if they do feel like a little bit of pressure there. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people that have been waiting for this fifth installment to come out. I mean, the teaser trailer was dropped on us 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to finally check that out. And, of course, you know, after losing Angus Scrimm, a.k.a. the Tall Man, earlier this year, I mean, the release of Ravager, this remaster of the first film, and then this Blu-ray box set, I'm just hoping that this is a really good send-off for the man, yeah. And may he rest in peace as well. Okay, we got some more good news on the way. The Conjuring 2, which came out earlier this summer, there's already a release date for that one. That one's going to be coming out on September 13th, and there's a few little bonus features, but nothing really too exciting. I'm just really surprised that this is coming out as quickly on Blu-ray. I mean, because the film came out in theaters on June 10th, I believe, so this is sort of like a really, really quick turnaround. Usually when big movies like this come out on Blu-ray this quickly, it's usually either they're an enormous hit or a monumental failure. So, and I'm not saying that The Conjuring are either. I mean, it did pretty well. I mean, it recently crossed the $100 million mark, but still, I mean,
I think it depends on the studio. And I've seen, I mean, I'm already starting to see, like, you know, on voodoo.com, like, you can already pre-order Star Trek Beyond, you know, that's still in theaters. So I think it depends on the studio and how much money the film's made, but I don't think you can. Like, you used to be able to kind of pinpoint it. Oh, this movie's doing horrible. It's going to be on Blu-ray next week, you know. But I feel like, you know, unless they have a reason to wait, you know, they've already made their money, you know, and they do all the special features and all the commentaries before the theatrical movie's release. So, you know, I mean. I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with it because I'm not able to make it to the theater as much. So that's the sooner I get to see it, which is fantastic for me. So, but right. I'm excited to own Conjuring 2. I really want to see it again.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah. Like Disney, I feel like Disney waits like 6 months to a year. Another one of the few.
Yes.
I guess studios that wait that long. But yeah, I don't know. I guess strike while the iron's hot, man, you know?
Exactly. True. Next up, we have a movie that we announced on the site a little while ago. This one's called Private Vices, Public Virtues. This is the 1975 film from Miklos Jankso. And Mondo Macabro are putting this out in a limited edition Blu-ray, 1,000 numbered pieces. And that's going to be coming out on August 22nd with pre-orders beginning on July 29th. And a retail edition Blu-ray is slated for October. It's going to be a region-free Blu-ray with a new high-definition transfer. It's got a lot of features. The only two features that won't be on the retail edition are the exclusive slipcover and a booklet with a brand new essay by Max Weinstein and Joe Yannick. So, Private Vices, Public Virtues. If you want to get your hands on the special edition of this one, that one's August 22nd. And I really don't know anything about this film. This is actually one of those that was sort of like, it caused a big stink when it premiered in Europe and it kind of got buried. So it's good that, you know, films like these are getting a second life via Blu-ray.
I'm definitely curious. We'll have to see. I wish I could just rent it, you know, but the package looks pretty great, so I may have to just grab it.
Yeah, me too. And the last Blu-ray news I have comes from Screen Factory, because it wouldn't be a week without Screen Factory news. They just released some details regarding their collector's edition of Bubba Hotep. That one has a street date of November 8th, and there's a Don Coscarelli approved art by Joel Robinson, and are for pre-order. The extras for this one are going to be announced at a later date. So, yeah, we'll discuss those at another time. But they also just released some new art for both of the David Cronenberg films that they announced at Comic-Con, which are Rabid and Dead Ringers, and those look actually pretty good. Which reminds me, I'm gonna do a little front cover roundup for the site, so keep checking back for that, and you can see the new artwork for all of these Scream Factory releases. So in TV news, we got a little bit of an update on TNT's revival of the TV show Tales from the Crypt. And the president of TNT, Kevin Reilly, was saying that Tales from the Crypt will be on towards the end of 2017, fourth quarter of 2017. I'm assuming Halloween. And before this is going to be part of a horror block that TNT are going to be doing. The other two original series that they have lined up is an anthology of season-long horror tales called Time of Death, and the other one is called Creatures. So I thought this was actually going to be premiering sometime this fall, but it looks like that block is going to be premiering next fall. So that's your update on Tales from the Crypt.
Nice.
And in reboot news, Entertainment Weekly is reporting that Saw franchise executive producer Peter Block has acquired the rights to Pumpkinhead, and he plans on shooting a reboot sometime next year. And he also promises that it's going to be a practical effects heavy reboot. So, yeah, this is actually a reboot that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on it a little bit. But, I mean, Pumpkinhead's such a cool monster that, I really, you know, I hope they don't try to remake the first one, like, shot for shot. Or I hope it's like a new, you know, this monster's terrorizing someone new kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, almost like a spiritual sequel.
Agreed. This series had the potential of being sort of like an anthology-esque sort of franchise. It's just that the second film wasn't that good at all. So bad I didn't even bother with the two direct-to-TV sequels. I remember just sitting there watching Blood Wings going, oh my god, really? I mean, the dip in quality from first film to second film was just so dramatic. It was almost like Howling 1, Howling 2.
Oh man.
So I would love to see Pumpkinhead get a second chance.
Agreed.
I'm not a remake hater, so don't hate me.
No, I don't necessarily hate remakes, and we talk about, remakes all the time. I mean, me and Brad are always sticking up for the House of Wax remake.
people which ask. I still haven't seen yet.
It's pretty good. I don't know for what it is. It's a pretty cool little slasher. I mean, I actually dig the Friday the 13th remake myself. There's certain movies that if the remake's done right and done fun, nothing's ever gonna take away from the original. The original's always there. But,
exactly.
You know, but movies, I don't know, if they try something new, I think that's what makes me like a remake more. Like, make it interesting, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, of course.
The Ghostbusters remake, like, I wasn't too keen on, cause I felt like it was just rehashing a lot of stuff that was redone, that was done better in the first movie. You know, granted, seeing that my daughter had this team of women Ghostbusters to look up to, and she's really loved it because they were girls, because she doesn't have a lot of girl heroes, like that was cool. So I see, you know, that aspect of it, but you know, remakes are very, right. You know, I don't hate them. I'm always kind of cautiously optimistic. That said, the remake of Ben-Hur looks like total dog shit.
Oh, God. I already shared my thoughts about that on Twitter, so I'm not going to go into that any further.
But, you know, maybe I'll rent it one of these days. Like, I ended up renting the Clash of the Titans remake, and I actually kind of liked it for what it was, you know? And I actually kind of liked its sequel, Wrath of the Titans. So, you know, I mean, they are what they are. But see, nothing's going to take away from the original. You know, if I have a choice, you know, I'm going to rewatch the original of Clash of the Titans over and over again, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, Pumpkinhead's such a cool monster that I think they have the right people kind of helming it. So, yeah, man, bring it on. What the hell?
I agree. I'll give it a shot. So that's all the news I got for this week, Sean.
Awesome, Josh.
What say you?
Thank you very much, man. We will talk to you next week. Keep up all the awesome work on the site. As you know, you can check out all the news stuff on thescreamcast.com. Go to thescreamcast.com/news to go directly to all the news posts. And then, Josh, what's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Dr. Splatter, DocTorSplatter.
Nice. And if you click on, Josh's little picture or name or something, I think I have a link to your Twitter right there. So make sure you follow Josh on Twitter for, all the other stuff to take a peek.
Yep. Follow along.
Into Josh's private
life. See what I got for him.
All right, Josh, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
No problem. It's my pleasure. See you guys next week.
So we are here. Justin Beam is still with us. What's up, Justin?
Still alive, yeah.
the big news we wanted to talk about, and the reason why we kind of wanted to, I guess, discuss it a little more in depth was because, you know, since we started the show, Brad has always mentioned that Lionsgate has this collection of fantastic 80s and 90s horror movies. And they're all kind of locked up and, you know, all these other, like Scream Factory and Arrow, they're all, you know, bringing back all these, you know, horror flicks, but there's a whole bunch that were still, missing and not showing up. So once, you know, we started digging around and in movies like, you know, Chopping Mall especially was hugely sought after. Turns out it was owned by Lionsgate. We started doing our, stream screams to kind of bring some of these movies out in the open, because Brad noticed that there were some HD masters on voodoo.com to buy or rent. What were some of the movies we talked about on the show? House?
Yeah, we talked about Paper House. I know Chud 2.
Mm-hmm.
Parents. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about actually probably a few of them.
Yeah, no, that was the thing. Like we were, those are kind of the first ones you would seek out when you're suggesting movies. Like you're looking for specifically kind of those Lionsgate titles.
Yeah, so you know, it's back going back. I mean, not for the very beginning, but Vestron was one of I'm not 100% sure on this, but they were one of the leading distributors out there in the 80s. Fairly popular and very, very big at the time. And then, of course, shit went sour. Lionsgate pretty much picked up a lot of their titles, which Vestron Pictures was there. Lightning Video was another one. IVE was another one. So there was a mixture, and a lot of these films went off to other companies. You know, I know that I think it was reading originally Vestron had like The Princess Bride and Young Guns, but of course both of those were sent off to like, you know, 20th Century Fox, something like that, and you know, those films, because mainly they reserved mainly the rights to video cassette, but, you know, 20th Century Fox obviously owned, pretty much the theatrical and then obtained the rights, I guess, later on. I don't know the full story, behind it all. But, you know, there's a lot of films under there. I think Live was another one, that basically, I think Live obtained IVE or IVE, obtain Live. I'm not 100% sure. I just know it's basically one big stirring pot. Lightning Video, Lionsgate owns quite a bit, and I think with this resurgence of older films in the past couple years on Blu-ray, it's definitely been on their minds, I would say. And now we are getting, I mean, they announced what, like 6 or 7 within basically a week, that they're doing in September and October. So it sounds to me like they're going to be digging through their vaults. And I hope it's not a rush thing where they're just doing whatever just to get them out, but it'd still be cool to get them out there. Just make sure that they do Slaughter High and Class of 1999, because Class of 1999 is the Lionsgate title, people. I might see the day. It was a Lightning Video and then put out by Lionsgate on DVD, so I definitely know that they own it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they're working with Red Shirt Pictures on this whole entire line.
Right, which that means that they're going to probably take the time and do it, because I think this is a company that's listening to its fans.
Oh, totally. I mean, they even got the numbers on the spines.
Even though that they, even they're not maybe very vocal about it, because they're not vocal at all. I mean, we just kind of got this dropped on our, we knew about it mainly because Jim Warnarski was talking about it for the past couple of years that it's being released on Blu-ray. And being we knew Lionsgate owned it, we can only think, but we had no idea that there was going to be a Vestron collector series and multiple films, especially Chud 2 coming out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It's just an odd thing for them to pick, but, you know, maybe going down their vault and just picking titles here and there, maybe stuff that's easier to put out or obtain. I'm all game for it, even if it's Chud 2, which I'm actually a fan of, so we'll get to see it. Now, Justin, what was your kind of experience, you know, kind of growing up and being seeing those Vestron titles and Lightning titles on the shelf?
Vestron was a frequent logo on the screen that it's comfort food. It's like even more so than Canon and a lot of these other labels that we fondly remember now we look back on. I think Vestron was one of the horror fans' best friends, and they're such an adventurous distribution label that they were just all over the map. So it didn't matter if you were just diving into horror or just shitty action or whatever it might be. Odds are you're going to bump into Vestron sooner or later and often. So I always loved seeing the brand, and they've had so many titles over the years under their banner that are my first exposure to them was through Vestron, like Company of Wolves. And, I think Phantasm, the first one I saw, first version I saw of that was Vestron. Suburbia was one, Corman, you know, I mean, so there's so many films that I was introduced to through these guys. And I had no idea. I hadn't been paying attention too much to what Jim Wynorski's been up to. I love the guy, but I haven't been keeping up on him. It's great that Chopping Mall is finally getting what it deserves. And I'm glad that that was one of the flagship titles, because that movie is essential and has been sorely lacking this, a great release. And Jim's one of those guys who in general has suffered through all of this. While he's watching some of the most minuscule titles get the deluxe treatment, I love his catalog. I really like his cinema, his brand of cinema. And there's been very little of it that's even available these days, because so much of his stuff is on these little labels that disappear after a few years.
Yeah.
Where it goes out of print. It's hard to find. A lot of his catalog is really hard to find. Or it's through New Concord, who just prints it for a year and then stops, and then maybe puts 1,000 out 1 year and then doesn't do it again. So it's all over the place, and it's good to see Jim getting this kind of love. I hope that this is the beginning of more of this. I know that Lost Empire, which is my favorite film of his, that just got released from, I can't remember the name of the label. It's a smaller label, but they just did.
On VHS last year.
On VHS?
Right. Or, I'm sorry, DVD.
Yeah, it landed on DVD, and the same company put it out on Blu-ray this year. I was really kind of sad because the Blu-ray is absolutely bare bones. It doesn't even have like a menu. It's just play. The commentary from the DVD didn't even port over. So that's kind of disappointing, but that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's been so hit or miss, mostly miss with him. I'm thrilled that this is finally happening.
I think what happened was, I know that before the announcement, before we had kind of, there was any formal announcement, I follow him on Facebook, so got kind of word that he was actually meeting with Lionsgate. He had a meeting with Lionsgate, and we knew that he'd been working himself on, I think, restoring Chopping Mall and actually doing some special features and things like that, like himself. So, like, we always kind of knew that a Blu-ray was coming of Chopping Mall at some point, but it seems like he had a meeting with Lionsgate, and I guarantee you because he talks to all the horror fans all the time. He knows what collectors want. He's follows all these different Blu-ray groups, you know, on Facebook, and he's paying attention. So I have a feeling he was kind of the one driving this.
I think he was a big part of
this. Because to all of a sudden have, like, you know, this Vestron Collector's Series, you know, it looks like they're doing the slipcover, they're doing the numbered on the spine, they're doing original poster art, not what's, you know, Scream Factory and Arrow doing with new artists kind of doing their own posters, like the actual theatrical poster art, which is, I'm a huge fan of that. Just give me that. Give me the poster art, the original poster painting. I'm good to go. But, so they're doing that. So they're doing it right. Like, they're definitely appealing to the collectors. And then, you know, everyone was freaking out about the price point. I talked to Mike from Grindhouse Video. He's working with his distributor to get it down to like under $30. I know for sure. I know that I've seen it.
$26.99 on Diabolik, right?
Yeah. Okay. I saw that on Diabolik. So this, it'll be that. It's totally, affordable, for these. And especially for these first two titles, Chopping Mall and Blood Diner. I mean, you talk about you wanting more releases like this. You want them to dig deeper into their catalog, like pay, you know, vote with your wallets on these. You know, I would love to see these sell out. It's just such a fun thing to do. But yeah, the other titles that they announced, so that we got the Waxwork 1 and 2, and of course Bud the Chud, and then Return of the Living Dead 3, which that's a Trimark title. So it looks like they're not doing 100% what was on Vestron. This looks like they've created a new.
Yeah. I think just because they're picking Vestron because it was such a moneymaker and very, very well known. I think they're just, because it would be, you know, Lightning collector series.
Yeah.
Only really hardcore. I think it's just kind of one label, obviously to save money on printing and all that kind of other shit.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of funneling it under just one of the biggest brands. I think it's a smart idea.
They did a new, like, bumper, like a new logo bumper. I just saw that.
Yeah, I saw it. It looks pretty cool, too. I guess Red Shirt was part of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, man. I'm excited about it. I think I've only seen the first Waxwork, and I don't even remember watching the whole thing. What are your guys' thoughts on the Waxwork series? I mean, is this an odd thing? I mean, it's going to be double featured. Does that appeal to you guys? What do you guys think?
Well, I haven't seen any of them, to be honest. I really think that what they're doing is they're taking those movies that were like the six packs from a few years ago that they dumped into the bins, and they were really hard to find. I remember when they first came out, their word of them started to spread way before they even landed here in the Midwest where I am. And, my buddy had a friend in California who his local, I don't know, Best Buy or whatever, had them in a dump. And he's like, man, send us. So we actually sent the guy money. We PayPal the money to send these discs off to us. Cause like, where the hell else are we going to get Blood Diner? Where the hell else are we going to get? So what they've done is they've essentially just taken these titles that have sort of been already in the works for a while. with these discs that have been somewhat remastered at least. And it seems like they're upgrading those scans, or maybe just using the full scan that they had done for those DVDs, maybe anticipating this down the road. But that's what this is. This first run is like one of those sets. Yeah, it's just those titles.
It says they're all going to be newly remastered. I mean,
that's great. That's great.
I feel like they're really taking a chance, but I feel like they're taking an educated chance. You know, they know that these are going to do well. I mean, we just did Chud 2 and Return of the Living Dead 3 in our, you know, recently, right? Well, not recently, but last year at some point we covered those. And
yeah, we talk about a lot of Lionsgate.
I loved Return of the Living Dead 3. That one, I mean, Brian Yuzna has basically become one of my favorite directors since I saw Society and then Return of the Living Dead 3 and then Bride of the Reanimator. I mean, and The Dentist. Ooh, we might see a Blu-ray of The Dentist.
Yeah.
Love that flick.
It's like an IVE title or live or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, more Yuzna on Blu-ray. I'll take that. Chud 2, I wasn't really that big of a fan of, but, you know, that's one of those, like, if it spurs along a Blu-ray of Chud, then bring it on. Cause that's one that's surprisingly hasn't, seen a Blu-ray release.
I think it's, owned by Image.
Huh. That's weird.
Yeah, they're not very, too keen on, releasing things anyway. They're very much like Mill Creek, but at least they're both kind of get diving into Blu-rays again, it seems.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I mean, it'd be great if they saw that Chud 2 did really well and were like, oh shit, we're sitting on a gold mine here, you know?
I mean, I hope it, like, the thing is people have, like, I know that everybody was really quick to shit on Chud 2 again. but if we were not going to purchase these movies and give them love, cause we all love shitty movies, so learn to love shitty movies if you think it's shitty. Give it some love too, because the only way we're gonna get more, of those kind of lesser known titles is if we support the lesser known titles. I mean, Chopping Mall, you know, and Waxworks, Return of the Living Dead 3, actually probably not even Return of the Living Dead 3. I think Waxworks and, Chopping Mall are going to be the biggest sellers.
Yeah, and I think Blood Diner will do well too.
Yeah, but Blood Diner's also had a region-free Blu-ray for, you know, some time now.
I own it. I still haven't watched it.
So, you know, not saying it's going to hurt, but I think people are smart enough that if you don't support it and if it's limited, sell it out or whatever, you're not going to keep on getting these.
Because,
you know, even though it's Lionsgate and they're pretty much like a billion-dollar company, one of the biggest distributors right now, they're not going to spend the time and money into something like this if it's not at least somewhat profitable.
Right.
So, support it. Waxworks, man, those are some killer fucking titles. Like, Waxworks 1 and 2, that was in every video store, it seemed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun. It's very, like, Waxworks almost feels like it was made for kids in a way. It has a very, like, fantasy childhood, kind of aspect to it, very much like, you know, the Goonies and shit like that. That's the way I remember Waxworks. I haven't seen it in probably a few years, but I really, really like Waxworks and I like Part 2 as well. Great special effects, great monsters, getting trapped in the Wax Museum and then becoming part of kind of a wax, you know, getting sucked into this kind of, you know, realm where you're fighting, werewolves and shit like that. Just a lot of fun in general.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see it. Of course, Chopping Mall, Return of the Living Dead 3. You heard our responses on that and Chud 2. Just support Chud 2. I'm really afraid of that one. When they announced that, I put my fist in the air and I was like, yeah. And then I was like, oh, wait, people fucking hate this movie. I was like, man, Chud 2, like, I hope that people give it another chance because it's not that bad. Don't think of it like a Chud sequel. Just think of it as like a horror comedy and you'll have some fun with it.
Yeah. There's some of these movies that have been around on the Vestron video label that I guess Lionsgate didn't get the rights to. I mean, because we've already seen Up From the Depths is getting that Scream Factory release. Return of the Living Dead, the original, of course. And Reanimator, but what are some movies that you guys are hoping get released on Blu-ray. I know that I really would love to see The Gate get a Blu-ray release.
The Gate could be one of them because I'm pretty sure they own that too. I was surprised that wasn't one of the main ones announced. But, you know, you can't name all the greats at first.
Yeah.
You know.
What are some deep cuts that you guys are kind of hoping for?
What do you say, Justin? What would you say?
Mortuary.
That's not on Blu-ray.
Scorpion
released
that.
it last
oh,
year.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm way behind the times.
I only know because... Oh, you know what? God damn it. Sword and the Sorcerer. Right? Come on.
I don't know what that movie is. I'm sorry.
Sword and the Sorcerer, man.
I don't like those sword and sandal movies, Sean. Sorry.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong one. That's not Sword and the Sorcerer. God damn it. It's one of those, whatever this is, it was already released by Scream Factory.
Well, I really hope that they bring in Bob Balaban to do kind of a collector series of Parents.
That'd be amazing.
I think Parents is a very underseen
movie.
Yeah,
agreed.
Bob Balaban is, a terrific filmmaker and a great actor and a fucking phenomenal writer. So I like to see Parents. Of course, I mean, I can only say Class of 1999. I think Sean says you can mention it one time on every show, but that's definitely, that was lightning video. I think MGM took over, releasing it, I think in theaters maybe. But I believe that Lionsgate obtains the rights because a DVD has been released at Class of 1999 along with those packs that Justin mentioned earlier. So I'd like to see that. I'm trying to think.
Unholy?
The Unholy, that was in one of those packs. Mm-hmm, yeah. Recent flick too. Yeah. Anything else for you, Justin, that you'd be excited to see?
I don't know. I think that they did in The Company of Wolves. I mentioned that earlier, I think. That's when I remember being a Vestron thing from when I was a kid. And if that's the case, I would love to see that get the deluxe treatment.
What is that?
The Company of Wolves.
Yeah, that has a UK release.
Yeah, I think that is a Vestron title because I remember that cover, man, of that wolf coming out of a woman's face. Yeah. Jesus, that was kind of horrifying when I was little.
That one, because I have the UK Blu-ray. It looks okay, but that one, if someone came in and remastered that thing...
It's a beautiful film.
It's great. Yeah, I love that flick.
Oh, we might actually get maybe Little Monsters.
Oh yeah.
A Lionsgate title.
I just found my videotape of that. My God, it's so good.
I think it's an out of print DVD too, so that might be on the agenda.
I have that from Vudu in HD. I own it.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of these titles are in HD on Vudu. But I mean, people are all about the Blu-ray now, and I honestly am too. Especially if we're getting new transfers. Oh, you know, another one that we talked about, Sean, that we battled because you did not like, but Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College,
and John Carl Beekler,
is a Vestron title that I would be stoked to see
because the first two got that Scream Factor release.
Yeah. So, and then I know Jim, he might be. I don't know if they own 4, but, you know, Jim Wynorski did 4, so we'll see. Even though that's not really a Ghoulies movie.
My God.
That movie's a mess. Of course, Slaughter High, that was on a pack as well. And, you know, but my question is that are they going to release more than horror? Because Vestron has a lot of comedies as well. Some of their bigger titles have been released, but no, like, comedies or action films have been announced yet. And I know that we're just in the beginning of this, but we've had 7 titles. But in the future, I'm kind of curious if they're going to release some of these, I want to say Girlfriend from Hell. Is one of them. I know that, China Girl is a film that's actually directed by, who's the Bad Lieutenant director?
Which one?
old one. Come on. I'm not talking about no Cage shit. God damn it. Abel Ferreira.
Yeah.
You know, he did China Girl, so I'm kind of curious if, you know, they're going to dip into kind of the comedy realm and action realm. Primarily they were horror, of course, but I would like to know if they're going to dig deep into that. Now that would be some deep cuts.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know if that's kind of what they're going, are they going for a horror thing, or are they just going to basically be like, well, hey, these are all the old titles.
For now it looks like horror. I mean, I haven't really seen, you know, other than their little press releases, they're not really going into further in depth about what they're doing. They're just saying that it's going to be a line of classic genre films. So they're not specifically saying horror. So, I think
Morgan Stewart's Coming Home, I think, is another one that they have. And don't laugh. Don't laugh.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you know, another one, you know, oh dude, I know other ones because now I'm remembering when we talked about them. We covered Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat.
Oh yeah. That'd
also
be fun.
Lair the White Worm.
Oh yes.
So some Ken Russell in HD, which would be nice.
I mean, Lair of the White Worm is just so much going on with it. It's a, you know, it would lend itself very well to HD. I mean, I think I've rented it on digital in HD.
Yeah, but that's another one. I mean, there's countless. I'm trying to think of that logo on the side. You know, also Lightning Video, which I think maybe Troma picked up some Lightning Video stuff back in the day, because I want to say even like Flesh Eating Mothers was a Lightning Video title, but eventually got picked up by Troma. Because Troma, you know, they bought out a lot of companies at the time, and they released them under their label, which there's this common misconception that it's, oh, this is a Troma movie, and it's actually not. You know, it's Troma just re-released it, and they distributed it for a short time on VHS and then again on DVD.
Here's one, Brad. We're going to try to talk about it at some point, but Gothic, the Ken Russell, speaking of Ken Russell.
Yeah.
Is that another one? Was that Vestron, or is that Lionsgate owns it?
Yeah, well, if Lionsgate owns it, then what I think, though, is, you know, we could say Vestron, but I think that if Lionsgate owns anything, they're going to put it under kind of the subsidiary of Vestron. Mm-hmm. That's what it seems like they're going to do. So we might get some crazy shit coming up here.
That'd be great. I mean, the crazier, the better.
But yeah, I'm stoked. Anything else for you, Justin, that you'd be excited about or are you thinking about?
No, nothing that I can think of off the top of my head. I hope that more labels do this. I think it's great that companies like Warner have their print-on-demand stuff. But to really love these films and to put this much into them, I think is incredible. And I think that the physical media in general, but especially the Blu-ray market, so much of it is owned by collectors now that you need to serve that audience. And I think these guys get it. So I think if you're going to go there, if you're going to do anything with your catalog and hope to make any more money off it again, you're going to have to treat it this way to do anything with it. And I really hope that this lights a pilot light that guides some of these other studios and labels to do this kind of thing, because it's so important that these things don't just dwell in 10th generation, you know, crap on YouTube forever. We need to rescue these titles, and it's beautiful that this is happening.
Agreed.
Yeah, I just, with the collector's market, you know, I know that this, you know, collectors have actually helped, but they've also kind of ruined things at the same time. Like, you know, the demand for it is what has helped a lot of these companies and a lot of these smaller companies like Scorpion Releasing and, I mean, even Code Red, Scream Factory. Olive has dug through the MGM vaults and released some stuff. So, you know, the companies are seeing it as a collector's market, but it's becoming two collectors now, because now we're getting limited editions, you know, because limited edition –
which is frustrating, yeah.
You know, you have limited edition soda at Target, but, you know, you can go to the store and you can still get it. But when we have limited edition Blu-rays that are down to like 500 or 1,000, you know, you have scalpers at this point, buying as many copies as they can because they know it's going to go out of print if it's a high-end demand title. So at the same time, collectors kind of ruined it too. It's a very frustrating thing because, you know, like I said, it has become a collector's market and people are collecting them like they would toys and cars, you know, toy cars, and baseball cards and shit like that. They don't take them out of the package. They just leave them. And it's like, man, I want the movie for the, you know, to watch it. Not to sit on my shelf to look pretty in a slipcover.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can watch the movie.
Twilight Time drives me nuts with that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they're the worst with that kind of shit.
Yeah.
I've had a few that are just heartbreaking.
I only buy Twilight Time if I really, really, really want the movie. I mean, I would, if they were cheaper, if they're easier to get, I would probably take a chance on more of them. But I think the last one I bought from them was Mysterious Island because I'm trying to collect all these, Harryhausen type flicks, you know?
Right. I'm with Justin on that. It's sometimes it's very, very disappointing because, you know, being that they're so limited in the high price, you think you're going to get something special. And really, you're just getting a glorified olive release, you know, bare bones half the time.
Yeah.
You know, an HD master. The only reason it's high price is because it's so limited and they probably won't sell. I mean, how many titles can you think of that are actually sold out from Twilight Time?
Oh, not many.
Just the horror.
Right.
It's mainly just the horror titles and, you know, some of the ones that were released in the very beginning. So, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know. Like, I understand why it has to be limited because you don't want to go broke doing, you know, maybe 5,000 prints. But at the same time, you know, if you didn't make it $29.95, you know, because you got to think of what it's like. You know, one thing I wanted to touch on for us in this episode is what it's like to be a horror fan these days. You know, with these films that are, like I said earlier in the show, these films that are being re-released to us, it feels like we're going to the store again and watching movies for the first time. And we get excited when new movies are announced. I've seen Chopping Mall 30 goddamn times in through my life.
Yeah.
And when that thing was announced, man, I felt like a little kid again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and I own the DVD. I can watch it tonight if I wanted to, but there's something special about that announcement. And, you know, seeing, it's almost like we get to see the movie live again.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see it in a new light. Just like I was saying about the Mario Bava film, is that it, you know, it feels like we're watching it for the first time again. It's like, I don't want to watch it again until the Blu-ray comes out. That's kind of how I feel. Like, I want to watch this movie in glorious HD with the fucking lights turned off on a weekend with, you know, a drink in hand, watching fucking Chopping Mall and watch, you know, Susie Lee, Barbara Crampton fucking run around and kill bots, kill everybody. That's what I want to see. You know, and it's special to us horror fans. It's just sad that sometimes it gets, you know, people are pissing in our pots because they're making it more of a collector's market and be like, ooh, I own this and you don't because I got up at 3 a.m. for this limited edition sale and I'm going to take pictures of it and post it all over forums and Facebook and Twitter, and it's sealed. And then the motherfucker turns around in 3 months and sells it, and the shit's still sealed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I don't know. Like, collectors have done so much good with kind of making this market and seeing that it is profitable. But at the same time, you know, these distributors, some of them are taking – you know, I think advantage of it as well because they know people are going to pay for it.
Well, that was the one thing that I was annoyed with that when Scream Factory did their little run because
they did their five like exclusives that are
you can only get it through them. They're pretty pricey for I think
$30
bare bones,
and they're bare bones. Yeah,
yeah, and then they're you know those movies like. You know, I think most of them I had already own on DVD, and I'm fine with having them on DVD. But, you know, if you're a fan of these goofy B movies like I am, I'm willing to take a chance on buying one, but the price has to be right.
The thing is, you're not going to have anybody blind buy anymore if it's like that. Because that's the biggest thing is, like, you know, it's just like renting a title. You go to the store, you see something cool artwork on the shelf or on Amazon, you take a chance. Well, I'm not going to take a chance if it's $29.95 and maybe I'm not a big fan of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, renting it's one thing, but buying something and, you know, I mean, you got to look as horror fans and these distributors have to look at us every fucking Tuesday. Something's coming out. And we're just not horror fans. We're cinema fans. We're fans of film. So, you know, you got to think of everything else that's coming out. I mean, if I bought everything that I wanted to on Tuesdays, I would literally have to be a millionaire.
Yeah, there's no way.
And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, we had the Scorpion Prisoner, female Scorpion Prisoner come out. I mean, with Microwave Massacre from, you know, Arrow, just Arrow titles in general, and shit like that, man. You can break the bank so easy these days.
I have. I've been in the doghouse a few times.
So, you know, and it has to be justifiable too. Like if you put a price tag, let's say Scream Factory put a price tag on Return of Living Dead, $30. I could easily see that because there's obviously a ton of work that went into that release.
Right.
There is so much behind it, so many hands in the pot, doing a brand new transfer. I'd be willing to pay $30, hands down, no problem. Same thing with most Arrow releases.
Mm-hmm.
Arrow only really does 2K scans these days. You know, same thing with Vinegar Syndrome. Have no problem dropping that much. But when you just release something bare bones on Blu-ray and you put a price tag on $29.95 just because it's not going to be a title that sells well. So in order to make up profit, you put a high price tag on it. I understand it's business. It's smart. But maybe you might sell more if it's not as high. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those weird business decisions that they have to make. And I get it. I was in, you know, I worked in clothing, but it was the same type of thing where we had to choose how many runs of t-shirts we were going to get, which ones we're going to sell. And, you know, we took a chance on some designs, and then we have all this stock just sitting there, not selling, you know. I get it, you know, and with everything, with printing t-shirts, you can buy like 1,000 t-shirts from our printer, pay like $5 a t-shirt, but if we order 2,000, we're going to be down to $2 a t-shirt. So it's like, well, if I sell $2,000, I'm going to make more money, but, you know. So, I mean, I get the manufacturing, you know, reasons behind all this, but, I don't know, like, it's a hard thing to try to think about. And I'm glad they're at least trying, you know, with it, but I think, you know, maybe Scream Factory, like, maybe they should have tried with some better titles that they knew for sure, you know, would sell. And that's what I feel like Lionsgate is doing, at least for these first two. They know that these two are going to do really well. And then all of a sudden they're going to release their next phase, right? Those other four, and see how those go. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's definitely a fun time to be a collector. It's an expensive time to be a collector.
It's amazing though. And, it's amazing.
But I mean, half the movies I own, it's like now I used to be pretty OCD with my collection. And you know, having three kids and working so much with my job and everything, it's like I'm less OCD now for sure. And so now it's like I want my, because I used to try to get all the movies I wanted on Tuesday, but it's not sustainable. I mean, I would be flat broke. And so now I'm trying to focus on, you know, the releases like the Arrow releases, the things that are worth that money. And I'm buying less movies. And I'm trying to force myself to rent more, but I'm hoping that some of these movies, you know, at least give us an option to rent it digitally or something. You know what I mean? That's the one thing. It's like, that's the one thing we're losing, I think, is the rental market with all these stores just being gone. Like, you can't just go rent a movie. I do the Netflix DVD thing now, and their library, their horror library, is actually pretty good. So, I mean, they even have, like, Criterion and stuff like that. So I haven't checked to see if they have any Scream Factory stuff, but it's like we're losing the rental market, and no one has, no collector has, and movie buff has the money to buy everything. So it's a weird time to be in. It's fun for collectors, but for the horror enthusiast, I mean, I guess what you're talking about earlier, Justin, with so many independent stuff being available for free, and then Amazon Prime having so many crazy titles. I mean, I guess, you know, we're never going to run out of stuff to watch.
I guess I shouldn't say for free. I mean, the great thing is
you're paying.
But yeah, and you support these people directly, and that benefits them in a big way. So it's a...
Well, for free, you mean? I mean, sometimes they'll throw them up on their website for free on YouTube.
Sure.
Things like that. Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of it out
legit
there.
Legit ways, people. We're talking legit free.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
So, Brett, I know you've slimmed down your collection a little bit. You're trying to change your habits. Is it just because all this crap coming out, or what's
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've been, you know, a fan for a long, long time, and I went through, you know, I was buying everything as it came out years ago. You know, every Tuesday, I would go to Best Buy and pick up whatever was new. So, you know, that's mostly newer releases. I'm not talking about older horror titles.
Yeah.
So, and stuff that was cheap, you know, on Amazon, you know, kind of surfing through, you know, browsing Blu-ray.com and picking up all the cheap titles for a long time. And so I, you know, had close to, Jesus, a few thousand Blu-rays, a few thousand DVDs, and thousands of tapes, to the point where I just had stacks and stacks. And, you know, as some of this stuff was being re-released on Blu-ray from, you know, first time on Blu-ray, first time on DVD type thing, I was like, you know, there's no reason for me to have a DVD and Blu-ray and or a VHS and DVD and when I have the Blu-ray. So I just went through and started siphoning through all that stuff, getting rid of pretty much all dupes, everything like that, and kind of going through my Blu-ray collection and being like, you know, pulling out the HD codes and saying, oh, I own this digitally. Do I need the Blu-ray? No, I don't.
Right.
You know, like if I owned, give me a title that you like, Transformers. There's no reason for me to have Transformers on DVD. I'll never watch that shit again. You know, but I bought it because it was like $5.99 on sale during like Black Friday or something like that. So I just went through and got rid of all my popcorn flicks like that. Got rid of all my big blockbuster titles, and just kind of converted to you know, digital HD on that, on Vudu. So I still have them. My digital library is humongous, mainly because I've been redeeming all those codes and selling them and then trading them in and using money for titles that I really want. You know, anything by Arrow, pretty much everything by Scream Factory, Cult Epics, Vinegar Syndrome, you know, now this Vestron collector's title, Lionsgate, Grindhouse Releasing, Severin, Synapse, Criterion, all those I keep an eye out because I trust the label. You know, I can go in blind and purchase some, you know, goofy fucking title I've never heard of before, but I'm willing to spend the money. So I can spend $30 on that, but it's hard for me to pull the trigger on, you know, a $2 Blu-ray of Transformers 7. You know, yeah. I'm just not wanting to do it because it's like, you know, I was a collector too, but I would watch the movies. That was the difference. But I was like, man, cause you want that collection, but really I just wanted it to be like any film nerd come in and, you know, orgasm when they see, you know, the stuff that's sitting on the shelf rather than seeing a bunch of junk.
Yeah.
And eye candy. I can save the eye candy for, you know, my digital library.
Yeah. Hey, we're running kind of long here, and I think, Justin needs to take off here.
Yeah, I'm going to need to get rolling.
All right. Justin, before you go, can you just let everyone know where to find your podcast and where to find you online?
Thank you. Yeah, you can find the podcast at justinbeamradiohour.com or just at my site, justinbeam.com. There's links there. It's on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, everywhere that podcasts are streaming, you can get your hands on it. So episode 3 comes out on the 7th. I'm not sure if this is going to air before then or after, but there's an episode 3.
Nice.
And so on from there, it's a bi-weekly show, and the best way to keep up with it is on Facebook with me. Or at the podcast page, obviously same name. So cool. Yeah, thank you so much again, guys. Really appreciate all the support.
All right, Justin. Thank you.
No problem, man.
Yeah, have a good night, guys.
All right, you bet. All right, Brad, let's wrap up the show.
Cool.
And, so yeah, you check us out, thescreamcast.com. Go there for news and all that other stuff. And if you like the show, we're really trying to get a little bit of cash so we could pay our writers. There's a donate button there. We have a few of you have been insanely generous signing up for like the monthly kind of donation, which is great. You can do a one time or a monthly. It'd help us out a lot. Like I said, we really want to keep the site going and we'd like to be able to sling some cash our writers away. So help us do that by doing that. Still looking into the Patreon thing. It's, you know, let us know, like, what you guys would prefer. If there's a Patreon, would you be willing to donate? You know, would it be easier? Let us know. Otherwise, I have it through the PayPal, and that seems to be working just fine for now. So, of course, check out our sponsors. Give them all some love. Go to grindhousevideo.com to order all the flicks you want. Mike's really good about pre-orders. My Scorpion, that Arrow box set, Scorpion, what is it, Scorpion Prison? Female. What's that called?
You just screwed me up.
Huh?
Scorpion Female Prison.
Scorpion Female Prison. That's finally shipping from them to me. I pre-ordered it a while ago, and Mike's really awesome with all that. So check out his site, grindhousevideo.com. Of course, Vinegar Syndrome, check them out. Their monthly, we need to schedule our monthly, the next show. We got some movies to talk about.
I agree. Exploitation.
Heck yeah. And then Coffee Shop of Horrors, if you want some awesome coffee, check them out. And then who else we got? One of the Wolfman of Mars.
Wolfman of Mars, Kevin Spencer.
And Kevin Spencer. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors and check them all out there. Otherwise, all you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you very soon.
See ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.